This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we have double trouble. We have two experts in the studio today. We're going to talk a little bit about healthcare IT and maybe focus in on mHealth, or what the trendy people call mobile health. In the studio today we have Carrie McDermott. She's a Senior Director, Healthcare Technology Policy at Healthcare Institute, and Dr. Harry Greenspun, Senior Advisor, Healthcare Transformation and Technology at Deloitte. Good morning. How are you two doing?
Great to be here.
Good morning.
Feel free
Thanks
to talk
for
over
having
each other.
Us.
Everyone else does. I sure am. Yeah. You don't have to be that polite at all.
Yeah. Jonathan, it's the West Health Institute where Carrie is. So that I think you missed the West.
The West Health Institute.
That's right. The right part of the country.
Wow. Certainly. I'll tell you what. I screwed up on that one. I have to repeat that a few more times. I don't know how I missed that one. There's some listeners who know both your backgrounds. Perhaps we'll start off with Carrie. You can tell our listeners what your background is and switch over to Dr. Greenspun, and then we'll talk more about mHealth.
Sure. Well, I work for the West Health Institute, which is a nonprofit medical research organization focused on lowering the cost of healthcare. And what we really look to do is develop innovative patient-centered solutions that focus on delivering the right care at the right place at the right time. And prior to joining West, I had the privilege of serving as the director of healthcare for the Federal Communications Commission. So certainly no stranger to the mobile health space.
So interesting background, especially as far as my federal IT listeners go and federal information technology professionals. And Harry, your background, please.
Yeah, so I'm a physician. I'm a cardiac anesthesiologist, and I've been in the health IT industry for quite some time. I'm at the Deloitte Center for Health Solutions right now, focusing on, again, health IT and clinical transformation issues as we move toward through healthcare reform and other issues like that. And prior to coming to Deloitte, I was the chief medical officer for Dell. And before that, I was the chief medical officer for Northrop Grumman. So I've been involved in federal health and other areas related to that.
Before you two showed up in the studio, I was sitting in the green room reading a PDF of a little paper called Mobile Health that you released back in December. Very, very thorough, very detailed. It's like 19, 20 pages. And what I tell my students is that don't tell them verbally what you can tell them visually. And a lot of visual information in this and 2 pages of book notes at the end. So tell us about this little paper you wrote in December, Harry, and why our listeners should maybe download it.
Sure. So the Deloitte Center for Health Solutions focuses on research across all of healthcare. And we do surveys of consumers, we do surveys of physicians, and we look at topics that are important across healthcare. And again, that's all industries within all sectors within healthcare, whether it's payer, provider, or life sciences, or government. And so we've been looking at this mobile space because I'm tasked with our global mobile healthcare strategy, and we wanted to understand, you know, what were the key issues related to mobile health. And particularly in the U.S., a lot of the differences between how individuals use their phones for sort of their daily life versus how they use it in healthcare. We saw some pretty significant gaps.
And, you know, Carrie, you were speaking at a conference in December as well, just over here in the river in, I think, in Maryland. And mm-hmm. It was 5,000 people got together just to talk about mobile health. I couldn't believe that number of people.
Right, absolutely. The mHealth Summit, and it continues to grow year over year. And I think one of the exciting things we see about mobile health is that it can really help us do things differently in terms of dimensions of care that we can change. So as we aim to lower the cost of care and give patients better outcomes, we need to think about how do we change the site of care? It would be so much better to be, you know, in your home or something closer to the home as opposed to an expensive tertiary setting, or thinking about who the caregiver is. There's very much a move towards self-care where, you know, we want to empower me as the individual to take care of myself and do as much as we can along that care value chain, keeping it close to me as opposed to working all the way down to those most expensive specialists. And then the other, I think, really important piece around mobile health is looking at that market in terms of the fitness and wellness market versus trying to manage chronic disease. And if we can help people who are healthy stay on track, that's great. And if we can engage those individuals who are suffering from chronic illness to be able to better manage their condition, that would be even better.
And so we can go to westhealth.org and learn more about your organization. And I think what the takeaway is when I was there this morning was that they're trying to reduce cost. I mean, that's the big focus, trying to reduce cost any way possible. And mHealth fits perfectly in it, doesn't it?
It does. And it's not just about cost, but making sure that people as individuals, healthy individuals and at-risk and sick individuals, have better outcomes and really just improve their quality of life by using all of the enabling technologies available to us today.
And mobile devices should be enabling technologies. And if you read press releases, you watch the news, you find out that in 2012, 700 million mobile devices were sold. I mean, that number, do you believe that number? That's crazy.
Well, you know, it is a huge number. You look globally obviously mobile technologies are leapfrogging other technologies. And I think an important thing, and Kerry brings up a great point about really transforming care, is that when you look how other industries have adopted mobile as part of what they do, they haven't just done it to improve their existing processes. They've actually transformed the way they have delivered services, and healthcare can really benefit from that sort of innovation.
I was on Sunday morning, I was sitting at Christmas at the dining room table reading a book. My wife was next to me. She had an iPad and she had a smartphone and she had like three different devices going at the same time. And I'm reading a little book on Benjamin Franklin and paper. I felt so old fashioned here, but she said there's a right tool for the right problem, right topic. And I guess that's the conclusion here with mHealth. You have to have the right mobile tool for the right problem. Right.
Yeah, I think an important thing to think about, too, is that you look at different generations. So the adoption of these devices is phenomenal. And look at our 11-year-old. He was sitting on the couch. He had his laptop beside him. He had an iPad in front of him. Then he was on his mobile phone, calling his brother, asking a question. The boundary between themselves and their devices is rapidly shrinking.
So, Kerry, were you watching the Super Bowl and tweeting your friends and texting your friends saying, who's that loser? That was fair. That was a bad call.
I was the one watching the Super Bowl, which is funny. You know, in this household of boys, I am the one who is the most interested in sports. But I was there on my laptop, working, multitasking.
Well, tell us more about West Health and some of the initiatives we have going on this year for mHealth.
For mHealth. So we have a project at our institute that's focused on how we can help hospitals actually manage wireless within their facilities and thinking about how that extends beyond their walls. So when we think about mobile, that really implies the airwaves. And that is a very complicated and messy space that is only becoming more so because of the proliferation of wireless devices. And the airwaves have to manage the needs for different types of devices that are used for different purposes. So if I think about this in a hospital setting. If I'm there visiting my parents, then I want my smartphone to work when I'm in the hospital. So there's a consumer purpose. The hospital needs to be able to do its business. We've got nurses with carts on wheels. So there's an enterprise business. And then, of course, there are all these medical devices that are actually on patients capturing their information. And that information needs to be sent to other devices or electronical medical records, wherever it be. So there's a medical purpose. And so we want to ensure that our networks can support this range of uses from consumer to enterprise to medical with a known level of assurance. We refer to wireless as the new utility. You expect the electricity is going to work in the hospital. You know the plumbing is going to work. And wireless is becoming like that, where it is just a given that has to work.
What's interesting is that you have a master's degree in public health, and you also spent some time with the FCC. So you can really look at it from a very, very practical perspective as far as regulations goes and information that's important, not important for patients.
I like to think so. And what we find is that we are learning so much information about ourselves as individuals. And a true way to really benefit the public health is to figure out how do we aggregate and analyze that data. So I'm sure we'll talk a bit about big data and the potential for data analytics. But that is really going to be key, I think, to learning more about ourselves for our individual health needs as well as our population health needs, and then improving our healthcare system based on that insight.
A lot of insights garnered from surveys, and I think the paper you released in December did surveys on a lot of different people and got information on mHealth. Is that right, Harry?
Yeah, and what's interesting when you ask consumers about healthcare, one of the things we try to focus on is improving quality. And one of the ironic things when you ask individuals about quality of care, ask someone, do you have a good doctor? What they often come back with are around issues related to the service experience rather than the quality of care. It's not related to their outcomes. It's not related to have they gotten all the preventive care. It's what's it like to go see that provider. So we really need to tease these out of how can you get quality information, true quality information to people In a way that they can make better healthcare decisions.
It's almost an anecdotal response. It's not did they fix the cut in your hand, but how was your interaction with the physician and what was he like? And you know, it's funny, humans are like that, huh?
Yeah, and what's interesting is that as we get more mobile enabled information, that you know people will have more information available to make better decisions, and will relate to the kind of thing where you know you can choose a restaurant, you can choose your plane tickets, you can do all sorts of things and get information about you know what the best value is, and that's slowly coming to healthcare. And I think people will begin to start making decisions based upon the information they have right at their fingertips.
Carrie, we've had people in from the VA, we've had people in from HHS. I mean, the whole idea of healthcare IT in the federal government is just huge. I mean, we could almost do a daily one-hour show on it. Tell us about your experience at the FCC and as far as communicating devices in hospitals. What kind of guidelines can you give our listeners?
Sure. Well, the FCC has actually been very busy of recent working on initiatives to improve healthcare. One area they have is actually a rural healthcare program that they've recently reformed. This is about $400 million dedicated to helping improve the connectivity challenge for nonprofit and rural providers. And then the commission recently made more types of spectrum available for medical devices. And they just changed modified experimental licensing rules for medical purposes.
We'll have to take a break and come back, talk more about mHealth and healthcare IT. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Carrie McDermott, Senior Director of Healthcare Technology Policy at West Health Institute, and Dr. Harry Greenspun, Senior Advisor, Healthcare Transformation and Technology at Deloitte. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Carrie McDermott, Senior Director, Healthcare Technology Policy at West Health Institute, and Dr. Harry Greenspun, Senior Advisor, Healthcare Transformation and Technology at Deloitte. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I've done 300 shows here on Federal News Radio. This is the first show I've ever had with a husband and wife on the air. So I think we have to make confession here about, doesn't sound like from the last name, does it? But we got a husband. Is that any challenges for you, Harry, with this kind of a arrangement?
Oh, answer very carefully.
Well, I think, you know, Carrie and I often wind up on panels together. And someone asked me, like, she'll make a statement. Someone asked me, do you agree with that? And I said, well, of course I agree. I have to agree with it.
I don't have any choice.
Yeah. It's actually funnier because very often, because we're in, you know, related fields, people will ask me questions. And we know a great person to talk to about this would be Carrie McDermott. And they said, well, do you know how we can reach her? I go, oh, yeah, hang on a second. Carrie! it's been a great bonus to our relationship
that
she can certainly bolster my knowledge of a lot of areas, which has been very, very helpful.
Well, I think
that goes both ways. And yeah. I love being asked, do you know Harry Greenspun? And I say, I do. Do you know him well? And I just say, well, I like to think so.
What happens when I say, boy, that Harry's a real jerk, isn't he? And you go, well, wait a minute.
Never happened, thankfully.
Never happens. Well, speaking of Dr. Harry Greenspun, we mentioned surveys in the first block. I guess you're doing a survey here this quarter with CIOs and asking about healthcare IT and mHealth?
Yeah, so we had a survey just released from the Deloitte Center for Health Solutions, which was a survey of CIOs around the country. And what we wanted to focus on was, you know, not only what are you doing in the short term, but really what are your longer term priorities in the next 3 to 5 years? And we found some really interesting things. Obviously, most of healthcare CIOs are really focused on foundational issues around installing EHRs and building clinical data warehouses and that sort of thing. But the real challenge, and Carrie mentioned this earlier, is really going to be around, well, I have all this data. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to become a data-driven, information-driven, value-producing healthcare system? So there's a real focus on analytics and understanding how they can pull that data together. The other thing that was really fascinating, one of the biggest challenges that they've had is how do CIOs connect with the innovation community? Because it's a very tough organization. It's a very tough community to understand and get your arms around. And it's, I remember the old, I think it was the Donald Rumsfeld quote of there are known knowns and known unknowns and unknown unknowns. And for most CIOs, just understanding what's out there is a challenge. And similarly on the innovation community, to understand what the needs are of the healthcare system can be challenging.
And Carrie, I think that's the reason that there was this mHealth conference back in December is because how can you keep up with all the, no, I just said 700 million mobile devices last year, and they're all going to change. BlackBerry's just changed. Apple's going to come out with an operating system. I mean, it's hard for CIOs and everyone to keep in touch with the change, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And, you know, there are a lot of groups that aim to fill that gap and be that bridge between the provider community and the innovation community. And we see a lot of health systems also having their own chief innovation officers. But what we really need is a group to be able to say, these are our problems as providers. You know, these are people in the innovation community who are smart about solving this, and help them find each other.
One, I think, key area of information everyone should have is interoperability. I mean, there's so many different devices out there. We understand that. In a hospital, there's a whole lot of different devices we've never even heard of that have to interoperate, and then you have to worry about security. So this is a big challenge, is interoperability, isn't it?
Oh, it very much is. And it's a huge struggle because the way devices are set up right now, they're just not really conditioned to speak with each other. And I think when we think about interoperability, in my mind, that means having all the relevant information available whenever and wherever and to whomever it's needed to treat a patient. And sometimes the conversation around interoperability seems to be a bit limited to electronic health record to electronic health record. And it's really broader than that when we think about all the devices involved in care, and that the devices need to speak to each other, the devices need to speak to those health records, and the health records need to speak to each other so that we can have this seamless flow of data to do a better job of improving health outcomes.
There's a group called HIMSS out there. You're both aware of that. Mm-hmm. They have a chapter meeting coming up in about a week, and the whole chapter meeting is going to focus on enterprise architecture, and the reason for the focus is that so they can enable interoperability. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like it just starts with the design and moves down from there. But who would think the whole 1 hour for experts on enterprise architecture?
Well, and I think agreeing on the architecture is one of the most difficult parts. You know, once you agree on the architecture and the designs, then you can write your specifications and requirements and begin to test and validate against them. But that first piece of nailing the architecture is very difficult. And we've seen industry struggle for decades on how to actually agree on this.
Harry, one sea change or transition I see in the last 4 or 5 years is moving to be more patient-centered rather than, I guess, doctor-centered. And this is what we see. And if you have a patient that has a mobile device in their hand, all of a sudden, 2 and 2 is 5, and you can really leverage that capability.
Yeah, you know, one of the things we've seen is that, you know, the more engaged people are in their own health, you know, the better their outcomes, the more knowledgeable people are. And we're moving toward what's called, you know, patient-centered outcomes. Is actually a new organization within the government called PCORI, the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, designed to help advance that. You know, getting consumers engaged in their own health has been a challenge. And people love prevention. People like getting shots and that sort of thing, but not necessarily very focused on wellness and modifying their own lifestyles. And you know, I joked, I've got a fitness app on my phone, but it doesn't make me an athlete. And you know, what is it going to take to actually change my behavior and make better choices? And when I need to use the healthcare system, how do I make proper choices about what provider to see, what kind of therapies to pursue? And be a much more active person in my treatment and my recovery.
And that's, of course, very difficult for individuals because, you know, I'm the average person. I didn't spend over 15 years of my life getting medical training to be able to make these decisions. And so I think we really have a challenge to help get individuals better informed and understand the complicated choices before them.
I was at an event on Friday night. A company in Reston just opened up a new office. There were 200 people there. I was talking to someone who is an expert in change management. Mm-hmm. And he's done this for many years. He's published things. He's got followers. He's got certifications. And he was overweight.
Right.
So the question is, what about change management? No, for you. I mean, you got to point the finger. Now, I was polite and I didn't say that, but change management may be easy in project management or portfolio. But for individuals, that's the challenge there, isn't it?
Indeed.
You know, one of the things that we think about, too, is that this is one you're talking about mobile. One of the great opportunities is if you look at the be able to have a mobile device, which not only gives you information, but is where you are at the time and can connect you with other people. The power of social media, the power of connecting with others is a tremendous incentive for change. And I think this is one of the areas of where we transform how healthcare is delivered by really utilizing the kind of capabilities that mobile brings us. That we haven't had in healthcare before.
So when someone hurts their elbow playing tennis and they Google information to try to find out about it, from a doctor's perspective, is that good or bad? Is that, do you want patients looking around the internet and figuring out what that little blotch is on their toe or something? Is that valuable?
Of course it's valuable. It's more important. It's critically important for people to have an interest in their own healthcare and understand what's going on. When we survey consumers globally, what you find is that this sort of behavior or this sort of activity is very common, though actually the trust that people have in the information they get is pretty low when you just search things off the internet. So what they tend to do is actually do these searches, but bring that information they've gotten to someone they trust. They bring it to their doctor saying, hey, I looked this up. What do you think of this? As opposed to, I think I've got, some particular tumor or some sort of leukemia. I want this kind of treatment. It's a different process.
I would think so. Carrie, when you look at interoperability in different federal agencies, are there different agencies like FDA? There's so many different agencies that listen here. What success have they had? Are there standards? Is NIST getting involved with this whole issue?
I say all of the above. So many agencies are involved in this. Certainly NIST is one of them as our agency responsible for harmonizing standards. We have the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT that has put forth a standards and interoperability framework. We have the Food and Drug Administration, which has done a great deal of work with vendors on the medical device side to help drive interoperability there. So we have many players working toward this. And I think to see interoperability come to fruition, there's really a bit of a push and a pull. What we also need to see is providers be able to more effectively demand interoperability. And when I say more effectively, providers, of course, want this, but their efforts are very much fragmented and in silos with no real scale to them. So if providers could come together as a group and be able to do a better job of articulating to their vendors those requirements that they would need to actually make interoperability happen in their facilities, we'd be able to move the ball even further.
And so, John, you see why our marriage works, that, when someone asks me a question like that, I can immediately refer them to Carrie.
So you may know a half dozen things, and she knows the other half, so it's a full dozen eggs.
Works
That's
out
great.
Well. One of the interesting things along that point is that, in the innovation world, is that many of them come from, as you mentioned, outside of healthcare, and they start poking around in healthcare. They've got great ideas. They've got great concepts. But when they start moving into healthcare, this regulatory framework is very challenging for a lot of them. And I think it scares a lot of them off. And their devices, their applications have less of an impact than they could have if they were really well integrated with what I call mainstream healthcare.
So, Carrie, is that the role of HIMSS? Are they the intermediary, the pontiff? I mean, we talked about the Pope just today. The bridge between both communities?
Sure. Well, I certainly couldn't speak for HIMSS, but I think that's an important role that they can play. And there's no such thing as just one intermediary. But I think it's great to the extent that different groups can help bridge this gap and keep the momentum moving in a shared direction. But again, we need to come back to agreeing on that architecture to really say we're all on board with this blueprint and now we're going to make the system work.
We come back, or we're not going to talk about blueprints, talk about healthcare IT and mobile health. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Carrie McDermott, Senior Director of Healthcare Technology Policy at West Health Institute, and Dr. Harry Greenspun, Senior Advisor, Healthcare Transformation and Technology at Deloitte. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Carrie McDermott, Senior Director of Healthcare Technology Policy at West Health Institute, and Dr. Harry Greenspun, Senior Advisor, Healthcare Transformation and Technology at Deloitte. If you'd like to have more information on the West Health Institute, you can go to westhealth.org and get white papers and all kinds of stuff. And if you want more information on Dr. Harry Greenspun, you can go to deloitte.com/center.
For health solutions.
And you can get the report that came out in December on mHealth. It's a great report, all kinds of graphic information. If you want to drill down, there's footnotes at the end, and you can expand and contract it. So it's a great little tool to have if you're looking at mHealth. And I think that many of my listeners are challenged with working with healthcare IT, but all of my listeners got to see a doctor sooner or later. So all of my listeners are going to be subjected to increases in health costs in the next few years and unless they're careful and learn more and more and more about it. Let's talk, Carrie, more about barriers to this transition to mHealth. Are there barriers from the old geezers like me, or are there barriers from the hipsters who have 5 mobile devices? How's that for a tough question?
I don't know. I think you're hipper than I am, John, so I don't know what that says about me. But no, I think there are multiple barriers. I think some of the key areas are around the business model. mHealth is really not going to be adopted until we have incentives aligned. It has to be, when we think about these new devices and solutions, They have to make our, as a physician, your job easier to do. It has to be convenient. It has to integrate into your workflow. mHealth is generating a lot of new data from a lot of different sources. And that data has to fit into the care flow and actually be able to go through some, you know, clinical decision support algorithms to make something real of it. And speaking of making things real, I think a particular challenge for mHealth is the scientific evidence base. There are so many new apps and technologies and solutions out there, but they haven't had a full and proper scientific vetting. So we really need to work on building that scientific evidence base so folks know what works and what doesn't.
Harry, there's 13,000 apps in the Apple, all health related, and they're all great and they all work great, don't they? Well,
we don't know yet. Interesting, and they're all creating a lot of data. Good data, bad data.
I mean, structured, unstructured, whatever you want.
Well, you know, if you look, I mean, I can, you know, I've got an app that I can tell you my when I go bike riding, will tell you what my heart rate was based upon my GPS.
Was that the picture in the white paper? Was that your bike?
That might have been actually.
Yeah, but
on the rare times I do exercise, as Carrie knows, and I nearly die. I've got all this data related to, you know, my exercise. Does my doctor care about that? Probably not, you know. And do I want to take a picture of every piece of food that I've eaten, to show what my diet is? I don't think so. The question is, can we use these apps to actually build better awareness? And then if there's something important going on, be smart enough to create a trigger that will engage our healthcare system.
Carrie, a lot of hipsters read blogs. And I don't know if you have a blog or if you can suggest one for our listeners just to learn more about healthcare IT. Is there something you can suggest?
Sure. You know, actually, a couple sources, I think, if you really want to understand what the federal government is doing, the Health IT Buzz blog is a great place to understand what's coming out of ONC. And then if you're interested in some of the more mobile areas, you can read his talk.
HIS
talk. Oh,
that's good.
His talk.
Harry, do you have a blog you can recommend for our listeners?
Part of what we put out from the Center for Health Solutions is our weekly Monday memo on healthcare reform and update. And we, as part of that, along with a weekly mailing, we also have a blog where my colleague Paul Keckley and others, including myself, put information up there. Also, use Twitter really to put out interesting things happening in health IT. I don't post that I'm, eating a turkey sandwich, but this article's come out. This is an important study. Something that people should pay attention to related to healthcare and health IT.
I'll be blogging about this interview, and you can find my blog by going to Google and type in John Gilroy blog or loser, boozer, hipster, no. John Gilroy. It all comes up sooner or later. I follow this guy named AHIER, and he's on the West Coast. And
Brian,
he tweets
Ahier.
A lot. Yeah. And this guy doesn't sleep. He must, he must get pep pills from his doctor because he goes 24 hours a day, seven mm-hmm. days a week. And he has a very nice little interview with several people, including Harry Greenspun. And it's a 5-minute little compressed predictions of what's going to happen to healthcare IT in 2013. It's great because it's short. and everyone hates 2-hour, but this is 5 minutes, punch, 20 seconds. Let's get a medical doctor, Dr. Higgins, 20 seconds, and it's real punchy. It's mm-hmm. it's a real nice forecast for the whole idea of healthcare IT in 2013, isn't it?
So I think the thing you're referring to is actually something that Deloitte produced.
He
put it up there very nicely. But Brian does some great stuff, and there's some people out there who follow this industry, and there's a lot of stuff to follow. So to have people out there who can sort of identify what are really important things to look for and what are important issues out there can be very helpful because, there's so much out there that you could possibly go through.
Especially because they don't work for Deloitte. So this is a person that doesn't work for the company says, no, this is a valuable 5 minutes. You can learn something for these 5 minutes. And
happy to be on his list.
it is. It's just it's amazing. I can't believe the information they have. It's incredible. So what lessons have we learned here, Carrie, in the last 5 years of this drastic change from desktop computers to mobile? Intel's not making chips for desktop computers anymore. It's completely changed away from that. Lessons learned for the future? What do you think about using mHealth and mobile devices?
Right. Well, I think the bottom line is change is hard. And it affects everyone in different ways. So we've got the typical curve of the early adopters to laggards. But I think it's all about finding what works for you and moving at your own pace as an individual, as a physician, as a provider system, and really focusing on how do you not just add new solutions, but how do you integrate them and really make them be a seamless part of the whole so that it truly is a solution and not just some cool new gizmo that's stapled onto what you've already got.
Harry, you know, there's 3.2 billion mobile users in 2012, supposed to project out to 7.4 billion in 2015. So people on the planet are going to have more than one mobile device, it looks like to me. I mean, what kind of lessons learned have you seen with just the implementations of this basic mHealth?
Well, I think one of the things we've seen is that, you know, it's a real opportunity to engage people where they are. And get information where they are. It's been very hard if you look at any corporate wellness program, if you look at a lot of public health programs, it's hard to reach people. And suddenly we have the ability to get information to people where they are at very specific times and at critical times in their lives and really irrespective of their location. And if you look globally, it's a great opportunity where you have very little infrastructure to be able to get pretty sophisticated healthcare messaging back and forth from people and really improve the quality of care and access to care.
Carrie, I'm going to play the devil's advocate here a little bit. I teach a course in social media. I tell my students to be active in LinkedIn. I'm active in LinkedIn and and encourage everyone to do it. Now, I know a multimillionaire in Alexandria who has no LinkedIn account and doesn't care. He's very, very successful and doesn't need it. There are probably people who are very, very healthy. I can think of distance swimmers who don't have any apps and they have great blood pressure and they're in great shape and maybe don't need it. So I guess the question is to both of you is that, well, there are some people out there that are in pretty good shape that don't need this, but what is the target audience for someone using a mobile app to improve their health? I mean, for me, I probably wouldn't use it, but who would be the target for someone like that?
So I think the real value targets are those people with chronic conditions. So we think about there are actually mobile platforms for managing diabetes and have this, and this is a company that actually has scientific evidence behind it with an FDA-approved mobile platform for diabetes management and has shown a significant reduction in A1C levels. And even about a 2-point reduction can save about $7,000 to $8,000 per patient per year. Think about nearly 30, 40 million people in the U.S. with diabetes. That adds up to real savings, and not just about the cost, but these people are actually having better quality of life and living a little bit better. I mean, but the technologies out there are really cool. I mean, there are pills you can take with your medicine to know that you're having medication compliance. You know, there are actually nanosensors that can float through the bloodstream and predict a heart attack weeks out. I mean, that's where technology is heading to do all these amazing things. But the key is figuring out for which people are those the right solutions, and then how to make it part of the whole system.
Sorry, it sounds like this is an application of social media that reduces cost for healthcare, and people can discuss different options and ways to reduce costs and eliminate some of the problems.
When you think about what social media helps people to do, is that you can you can motivate people to get together and accomplish goals, and you see this in exercise and fitness apps all the time. You think about when my mom got a hip replacement and she needed to exercise after that operation, that sticking to an exercise plan is kind of hard, but if you can connect those people with other people and they
it makes more sense, doesn't it? Resonates.
They can be motivated and actually get that stuff done and have much better outcomes.
We're going to have to take a quick break and come back, talk more about mHealth. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Carrie McDermott, Senior Director of Healthcare Technology Policy at West Health Institute, and Dr. Harry Greenspun, Senior Advisor, Healthcare Transformation and Technology at Deloitte. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Carrie McDermott, Senior Director of Healthcare Technology Policy at West Health Institute, and Dr. Harry Greenspun, Senior Advisor, Healthcare Transformation and Technology at Deloitte. For more information on Harry, you can go to Deloitte, D-E-L-O-I-T-T-E, Deloitte.com/Center for Health Solutions. And all kinds of information, white papers and all kinds of stuff. And more information on Carrie, you can go to westhealth.org and find out what they're all about. And I love any organization that's focused on saving money, because it's saving me money. It's saving everyone who's listening money. I mean, it's like it. What's not to like, huh?
We're certainly trying.
Great. Well, this is the part of the show where I ask all my guests insightful questions on their technology background to see who, in fact, is the card-carrying nerd. We have two candidates in the room here. I'll start off with Harry and ask him my survey questions. So what was the year you bought your first computer?
First computer was 1983. I bought the original IBM PC with dueling 5 1/4-inch disk drives.
I remember those. You used to buy them with just one drive initially. That was crazy. Your first cell phone?
Your first cell phone was as a anesthesia resident in 1991. I had a car phone, not a cell phone, but a car phone that was bolted into my car so I could get calls from the operating room or from the recovery room.
It was tough sleeping in the car because you're always available.
There was one step up from the bag phone. I felt a little classier than that.
And you have a Twitter feed very popular. What is it?
It's at Harry Greenspun.
7,000 followers. I follow it at Harry Greenspun. And do you have your own blog?
I blog intermittently at the Center for Health Solutions website.
And do you use any online personal backup systems?
I do. I use, Deloitte has their own system. Plus I do a lot of photography. So I have to back up all my photos to, I do a SOS online backup.
No Dropbox, huh? Okay.
Dropbox I have as well. I got just about everything.
Wow. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have a Deloitte issued iPhone.
A number of apps on that? I mean, how many pages or I don't know how many apps you have on that.
I've got loads and they're in, but mainly related to travel.
You have any fitness apps?
I've got a few fitness apps, but as you can tell, I don't really use them.
Do you have a tablet device?
We've got one, but the kids are the main users of it.
I actually won one,
but they all use it now.
Yeah, I brought home a smartphone, I think 3 years ago, and it disappeared within 20 seconds. I haven't seen it since. Social networking sites you participate in?
I participate in LinkedIn in order to just mainly as a business card, so people can connect with me anytime they want. I use Twitter to sort of push out what I'm sort of doing professionally. And then I use Facebook as a way of connecting with friends and colleagues, so and posting a lot of photos there.
Cool. And the last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Last book I read was actually paper, in that Carrie and I are in the market for a new puppy, and I've been refreshing my knowledge of
paper training
dog,
or
dog training would be we're doing clicker training for a new
clicker
puppy.
Clicker training, wow, that's good to know.
I'm trying to see if it'll work on the kids too. Yeah.
Well, you're doing pretty well to the last one, but we'll have to go over to Carrie and find out what her background is. Okay, Carrie, question for you. You bought your first computer.
1992.
92. And you're your first cell phone?
1999 in London.
99. Well, I'd get some fashion points, but no tech points.
I'm going to have zero tech points. Oh, boy.
And do you have your own Twitter feed?
I do not.
Okay. But there's West Health, though.
We're at West Health.
Okay. And do you have your own blog?
I don't have a blog.
Okay. Online personal backup?
Whatever Harry's got set up at the house, but I do
partial
know Dropbox.
Partial credit for that
I've got Dropbox.
What kind of a smartphone do you have?
A work-issued iPhone.
I think she pointed out she also has an antique regular cell phone for personal use.
Yes, thank you for that.
A flip phone.
I have a flip phone.
There's nothing wrong with flip
phones. I like the flip phone.
I like them.
Thank you.
Me too. And a number of apps. How many apps on your iPhone?
A couple dozen.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a tablet device?
It's been, taken over by the kids.
I know that. Happened to me too. And social networking sites you participate in?
LinkedIn, Facebook.
Okay. And this is the decider here. The last book you read, was it electronic or paper?
Oh, it was paper. Yeah.
I tell you, this is kind of, you're probably neck and neck here. We'll have to do this to see who offers me a $20 bill to award the Nerd of the Year to one of you two. And
I'm not sure
show.
Who would want to actually get that award.
I've never got any takers on that offer. So maybe
I would take one for the team on this one.
There are a lot of terms floating around. There's HEIs and ACOs and this and that and electronic health records and interoperability. And there's all kinds of really good technical questions I can ask. I'm not going to ask those. I'm going to ask Carrie first. I'm going to say, well, Carrie, you've been involved in this community. I mean, you're involved in a family. You see kids going out and wrecking their bikes and climbing trees. And so what's going to happen 5 or 6 years from now? What's going to happen to healthcare IT? Are we going to see the elimination of desktop computers? Is all going to be everybody happy together? What's going to happen here?
I think the big focus for this year and the near future is really on implementation. So we're seeing a lot of changes. We've got the government using meaningful use to incent the adoption of health IT solutions. We have folks worry about, the technical issues around a thing called ICD-10, different way to actually, the classification of diseases and how we're going to manage stuff. I think that people are just going to be muddling along a little bit. We're going to see technology make a lot of advancements, but what we need to see is the marriage of technology into the workflow. And it won't, we're going to have this parallel change of care delivery and payment reform that's going to have to happen, in tandem with each other. And one will sort of help drive the other. So as soon as we incent different types of outcomes and ways of paying for things, then we'll find out how to deliver care to realize those. And as we find better ways to deliver care, we'll want to find the ways to pay for that and reward that.
Harry, it looks like doctors are all dressed up and ready to go, and their hands are tied by administrative problems.
Well, I don't think it's necessarily true. I mean, if you, you know, we talk about barriers to adoption among among providers in terms of adopting new technology, but you go into a hospital, they've got a lot of cool stuff. They got robots, they got lasers, they've got a lot of really interesting things. They're really slow to adopt new types of information sharing. And, you know, we've got to be able to share information. We have to coordinate care. We've got to, as we talked about earlier, engage consumers more meaningfully and use this data and perform analytics on it to make sense out of it. And if you want to see what sort of the future of healthcare is going to look like, you know, look at any other industry in present day. I mean, that's, you know, how do we do our banking? How do we make restaurant reservations? You know, how do we travel? How do we buy things? You know, all the types of services that we're involved in, that type of atmosphere will come to healthcare. Some places have it, some places are going to get it, but ultimately that's the transformation that we'll see.
Gary, your organization is focused on saving me money, saving everyone money on healthcare IT. Where do you think the focus is going to be in the next 5 or 6 years? Mobile, or is it going to be administrative, or what kind of focus are they going to have?
You know, I think that we're really going to be looking at those high cost chronic disease conditions and think about how we can disrupt the process of care delivery around those major cost drivers. You know, we've got congestive heart failure, we've got cardiometabolic diseases, osteoporosis, you know, things that are really just costing people a lot of money and putting them in a lot of discomfort that we could really do a better job of caring for.
And Harry, this app store and apps, I mean, is that just a sidelight? Is people going to look back at it and laugh and say, ah, it was just a fun thing for a couple of years. No one uses those anymore. Are people actually going to try to an app and try to find out if they can improve their fitness with an app or improve their use of insulin?
I think we'll see an evolution of this where, you know, right now we've got this sort of silos where you've got, you know, patients and consumers using apps on their own, and you've got, you know, physicians and hospitals have apps. It's really how do you integrate the two, and how do you really see if they're going to be effective? I think what we'll see as we move again toward reimbursing, you know, physicians for value and outcomes is to look at, you know, when a medication comes out, it's, you know, not only how effective is it, but how well do people actually take it? You know, what kind of results do they achieve? And you know, how can we use, you know, that kind of integration of sort of the personal health side with the provider held information to bring them together and make sense?
And I think another part of the personal medicine, as we think about personalizing and driving toward precision medicine, will be attempting to integrate individual genomic data and genomic information. So you want to really talk about what works for me when you can marry up my genome with a therapeutic or a diagnostic and understand how that's worked for others, then you can actually get towards tailoring things for individuals. And, you know, we're going to have a lot of debate as a society around the privacy of an individual versus the benefit of the public good.
And that's why people like Francis Collins, NIH, and the genome. I mean, it seems like in one silo here, the genome's making all this progress. The other silo, we have mobile, and then we have budget constraints. Something's going to happen here. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's like match, fire, gasoline. It's going to be good or bad. I don't know.
Yeah, well, there are a mix of things that either things are really pushing this very hard and making a lot of progress, and also barriers. And, you know, privacy is a huge one, as Kerry mentioned. And, you know, the thought of that, if you've got personal information on your phone and you leave it in a coffee shop somewhere, you've got a data breach. You've got loss of personal information. So people are concerned about this, and we need to get over those barriers.
And I think one of the barriers is information. That's why I try to have both of you on the air, try to get this out. I'll be blogging and tweeting about this. People can listen, get more information from Deloitte and also from West Health. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guest, Kerry McDermott, Senior Director of Healthcare Technology Policy at West Health Institute, and Dr. Harry Greenspun, Senior Advisor, Healthcare Transformation and Technology at Deloitte. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.